welcome to the Motorsport Coaching Podcast, sponsored by Motivate Training and Management. This is a podcast where we talk to drivers and industry experts to help you maximize your performances on and off the track. Let's get started with today's show. Hello, crew, and welcome to another thrilling episode of the Motorsport Coaching Podcast. I do hope you're enjoying these episodes. Of course, we would love if you can share it, leave us a review, and get the word out there about this amazing podcast. In today's episode, we're going to delve deep into the art and science of racing. Oh, sorry, I'm the host, Belinda Risley, and today we're going to rev up our engines in an engaging conversation with our very special guest, Ella and Dove. Get ready, team, to shift gears as we welcome Alan, a motorsport connoisseur who, along with his brother, propelled Karting One into one of YouTube's most watched car and vehicle channel. From a tender age, Alan's life has raced around the karting track, but however, his passion now is in two driver coaching and sim world racing. In today's episode, we're going to take a fascinating turn as we discuss Alan's contribution to literature, a compelling book on the neuroscience behind the razor-sharp reflexes and decisions of race drivers. But that's not all. Alan has also penned Motorsport Sagas, a fresh look at the intricate tapestry of storytelling that fuels the racing realm. Stay tuned as Alan sheds light on the importance of powerful narratives, not just behind the wheel, but also in shaping the careers of those who make motorsport their journey. We'll spin through topics ranging from the challenges of attracting sponsorship to the urgencies of embarking on adventurous and innovative feats in racing. By examining motorsport through the hero's journey, Alan believes heroes aren't just made on the track, but also in the pits and behind the scenes. Don't we know that? Crafting stories as riveting as those told by the likes of Valentino Rossi and Travis Pastrana. So buckle up, we're about to take a wild ride through Alan's vision of motorsport, where daring to be different could propel you to pole position. Now, without further ado, let's wave the green flag, team, and dive into today's episode. Well, hello, Alan, and welcome to the Motorsport Coaching Podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
For those who don't know you, can you tell everyone a little bit about you?
For those that may be more familiar with karting, I set up a website with my brother about 15 years ago called Karting One. Some of your Australian and listeners might remember a guy called David Serra, and he was doing some really cool stuff at the time with karting, and we sort of latched onto this idea that karting could be something better from a media perspective than what was around at the time. So we set up a YouTube channel, and we just created our own media outlet. Karting is it's an interesting motorsport. It's got a lot of history, vibrance, and we wanted to bring that to the sport. I just ran with it, ran the YouTube channel, and it was quite lucky because the early days of YouTube, there was not much competition. So we were one of the highest viewed car and vehicles channel for a brief period of time. And now the landscape is very different. But so that sort of got into it. And that sort of, it was a return for me from getting back into motorsport, because I'd been out of it for a few years. Because I'd been a musician, and then I came back into motorsport, and anything's kind of creative. That sort of way that I can express myself via whatever mechanisms, whatever tools I've got. Karting's quite good for that. And that's sort of how I sort of re-entered motorsport. But then I got into the coaching thing. My brother was a driver coach, and I sort of went my own way. Me and a friend, he set up a sim center in London sort of relatively early, because I got big into sim racing as well. So I become a coach there, and that sort of was a different section of my career.
I have so many questions. I'm just writing down notes to ask. How do you coach, or what do you coach in sim racing?
I coached on a simulator for car drivers. So I should be more clear. So basically, it was called a GTS RS simulation in London. And so we'd have people come to us who were just looking to get better in cars. And because we were London based, it was so easy to get to us. You know, we were right next to Heathrow, not next to Heathrow, but not far from Heathrow. So people internationally could come in, do a few sessions, and then go. But I admittedly, on my perspective, I'm very, very self-critical. So what led to the first book that I put out was a book called The Science of the Racer's Brain, which I co-authored with a man called Otto Lappi, Dr. Otto Lappi, who's a cognitive scientist at Helsinki University. And that came from me researching eye strategy, and sort of I was frustrated in myself because I was coaching drivers and I was starting to ask myself, what am I basing this on? And am I just building my coaching advice on sand? So I sort of did some investigations, and I'm a bit of a inherent contrarian. So whenever I feel like there's not a dogma, but there's a sort of set way of doing things, and instinctively go, is that really the right way to do it? Particularly in a sporting context. So I come across a book called Looking and Acting. I've got it with me. I had to get it out, by Michael Land and Benjamin Tatler. It's a very sort of sciencey book. I write this is like a book I got years ago, and it sort of got me started on eye strategies and the complexities to it. And then from there, I started looking at scientific papers, and that's where I come across Otto, who was doing some work at Helsinki University with road driving, and I sort of built up a relationship with him just conversing over emails. And then we realized that he was big into motorsport, and it was like really lucky. And then, yeah, that's how The Science of the Racer's Brain came about, from all of that. It's more of a, it's not a coaching book. It's a way, what we wanted to do with the book is to allow people to understand the cognitive mechanisms that are involved in race driving, and understanding the depth and interest there is, to hopefully inspire either scientists and researchers to look into the driving skill from a neuroscience perspective, but also to give drivers and coaches a better insight into exactly what's going on. It was all born from a frustration in my own performance that I was sort of teaching things that I didn't really understand.
And did you used to race yourself, Alan, or did you just get invested with motorsport through your brother?
So I started racing karts when I was 8 years old, but my brother had been racing karts when I was born. So I've always been into the motorsport. I'm one of those people that you meet, and I go, and they'll go, and they'll meet in a pub, and I'll be like, yeah, I raced Lewis Hamilton. So it's like that sort of thing. So I used to race Kimbolton Kart Club and Shenton Kart Club. So now and again, I would be on the same track at the same time as Lewis. Yeah. So I don't call that racing Lewis, but it's a small claim to fame. So all my motorsport as a participant is kart racing. I've done car driver coaching and stuff. But really my passion is kart racing, and particularly the history of it as well now.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, as you said, you've co-authored that book, the science book, and then you've got a brand new book that's just come out. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, so it's called Motorsport Sagas, Unlocking the Power of Storytelling in Motorsport, in racing, sorry, to be specific. So the book basically is expanding on this idea that I had, that to understand the way that a driver who's interested in motorsport wants to pursue a career, wants to enhance what they do in the motorsport realm, you have to understand narrative structure, because I was involved in the media side of things, and I've been involved in being a participant, a racer. So I've had this fortunate avenue to be both sides of the fence, so to speak. So I've unfortunately been, it's, I say unfortunate, but I used to be a recipient, because obviously karting won the website, it's not around anymore, as I've moved on to other things, but it was around for 15 years. So I used to be flooded with emails and press releases, and I interact with all of motorsport, because I write a lot and do various things. And I just see that there's a lot of, it's not naive, it's the wrong term, but it's a lot of paint by the numbers. And I think there's And then I see people doing it really well, and I see superstars, and I think those guys are doing something really well. They're very engaging, and you want to understand really why they are more engaging than other people. I want to understand. And there was this, there's a running theme, and I know I'm going around beating around the bush here. I'm trying to get to a point. There was a running theme that I'd have with a lot of drivers. I grew really frustrated with from my side, being someone that's run a media thing. I've also run karting events as well. Karting promoted them, and I'd say I'm not a fast driver in the sense that I'm not an elite level driver, but I keep getting opportunities coming my way. And then I'll see drivers that are quite good who don't get any opportunities at all. And I always question, I say, you have to understand that results are almost secondary to everything else. If you're not a compelling person, if you're not interesting, then why would anybody be interested in what you do? And it's a quite harsh lesson for people, because I'm in karting. It's an interesting sport because you've got two. It's a symbiosis, the way that the sport works, because you've got it. One side sees it as a stepping stone to cars, and there's a actual another side of the sport where it's its own rich, yes, motorsport with its own history. So it depends which side of the aisle you fall on. But I do see a lot of drivers that you can see underneath there's a frustration and a resentment, and they don't get opportunities. And I'm very harsh, and I go, you, I won't say it directly to them, but my assessment is you're not interesting. So the book is a way for me to explain to people in detail. And it's a short book. It's the polar opposite of Science of the Race's Brain, which is a very academic heavy book. This is a much shorter read, and it's something very different. But I wanted to give drivers the opportunity to understand what makes motorsport compelling, what makes certain individuals compelling. And what I did to do that was to frame motorsport in the context of a thing called the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of first put out there by a man called Joseph Campbell, and then further expanded upon by Christopher Vogler. So the hero's journey is basically a narrative structure that explains how films are structured, essentially. So when you understand how a film is structured, you understand how writers are able to build stakes and jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And all of these, and you understand how different characters within a film, what parts they play, what roles they play. And they're sort of these sort of roles and these structures are kind of ubiquitous through all storytelling throughout history. Now, like all things, there's a lot of debate about how is it really like that? Is it really isn't? Is it not like that? And actually there's different structures at play, you know, like film discussions are sort of crazy like that. But for me, I had to keep it relatively simple because I feel like the hero's journey is a kind of easy thing to understand. Everybody immediately gets the idea of a hero, a villain, a mentor. You know, they understand the idea of a call to adventure and various sort of ordeals that someone might come across. So once you frame motorsport in that context, I sort of explain what the hero's journey is. Then I basically give examples, and the main one really is Valentino Rossi and his sort of journey through motorsport. Now, we're all not Valentino Rossi, but he's such a good example of someone that had all of these elements in play. There was different characters in his journey. There was mentors. There was heralds. So a mentor is your Gandalf type character. Your herald is someone that announces this call to adventure. So you can see all the characters laid out, and you can see what was interesting about Rossi in particular was he kind of forced his competitors into particular roles, whether they wanted to be in those roles or not is secondary to the fact they were put in these roles. And then you have the sort of narrative structure. So you have the sort of the archetypes, and that's the character types. And then you have the journey map. So you have like the beginning of the film, you're in the ordinary world, you know, you just live in, you know, like is it Bilbo Baggins or something, like a hobbit, and then suddenly there's a call to adventure, something that for you to go on an adventure, and then you might be a bit nervous and you might refuse the adventure, you know, have doubt, and then, you know, then you those doubts get put aside, and then you face ordeals, and then you have a big ordeal, and it's like that kind of thing. Now, it's kind of, if you look at motorsport through that lens, you're able to deconstruct, what I hope to do in the book was deconstruct why you might find Valentino Rossi in MotoGP interesting, why you might find Formula One interesting, but why other motorsports aren't interesting and that compelling. And once you understand that, you can then maybe look at your own interaction with motorsport. And I'm not sure if I can't recall how harsh I am in the book, but drivers tend to be quite, and this doesn't, I'm just being blunt just for ease of explanation. Drivers can be kind of narcissistic in a way where it's, you're just looking at yourself. What can I do? What's in, and you're sort of, you are the hero of your journey, but in a sense, the journey can, what I want drivers to do is to take a step out and look at the big picture holistically and go, your singular vision alone might be interesting to you, but it might not be that interesting to anybody else. And there's two reasons why that you might find that important is if you're looking to get partners and sponsors interested, and if you're just looking to have a more interesting motorsport adventure. So at the heart of it really is, if you're not going on an adventure in motorsport, don't be surprised if people don't find what you do particularly compelling or particularly interesting. And I give example, I sort of have to use, I would love to use smaller examples. But yeah, I use the big ones like Valentino Rossi. Travis Pastrana is a very interesting character because he was someone that raced and then ventured into freestyle motocross, but still did a bit of racing. So there's a lot of interest there. And danger, which is inherently compelling, whether people like it or not. And then I talk a bit about Adrian Newey. So I try and sort of cover all bases. And then I talk about Formula One. And a particular topic at the moment, which a lot of people are talking about. I'm trying to explain what makes things compelling. So I talk about the structure. But then you look at Formula One and you have to understand, people might say Formula One's boring, but I make the argument, yes, but it's compelling. And it's compelling for these reasons, X, Y, Z. And this is why people watch it. Whereas, you know, people might say, oh, why don't you watch IndyCar, for example? It's more exciting. And my reply to that is that close racing isn't in short supply in motorsport. We have got a lot of close racing. We've got a lot of very high standard close racing. So, for example, one of my local clubs is called Trent Valley Kart Club, PFI. It's a world famous kart circuit. Their club races are as competitive as any motorsport event in the world. And, you know, I've watched, for listeners, I mean, I would mention cars in this, like I would say Kai Hunter, but maybe your listeners wouldn't listen to know their names. But for those that are listening, like, you know, I remember watching Alex Albon, I think Oliver Berman, he raced there, George Russell. So I can go to a club race and find the closest, most high standard racing in the world.
Yeah.
Nobody watches. So it's no different than when I was at the 2013 World Championship. The Karting World Championship was there, the first round, and Max Verstappen was racing. And at the time, it was quite funny because I put out a post on social media saying, this is the World Championship. And I took a photo of who was watching, and there was nobody watching on the bank where we were sitting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was me and my friend, Will Dendy. He's a very interesting character himself. And we were watching it, and Max Verstappen just dominated the race. And we were looking at each other going, this kid's just unreal. Like, it's very difficult to understand what makes drivers really good. But we both looked at him and just went, this kid's just unbelievable. But the thing that's fortunate from my karting experiences is that I can say, I've watched Max Verstappen. I've been on track with him as well. I went to Las Vegas to watch Schumacher race at the Supernats in 2009. So we look at these motorsports and I go, it's compelling to me because I know about these classes. I know about karting. But for most people, these sports aren't compelling. They're not interesting. Otherwise, people would go and watch it, right? So just to try and get back to my original point is, so if I can explain to people what makes Formula One compelling and why they can sell tickets at like $500 a go, but in 2013, I was on an empty bank watching Max Verstappen. Nowadays, that you wouldn't be able to get in if Max Verstappen decided to race. It would be huge deal. So I explained that, and then I sort of then finished by trying to encourage people to look at their own motorsport from the lens of adventure. So if you look at the way you go motorsport, and you can ask yourself, is this adventurous? Am I putting anything on the line? Is there any jeopardy here? Is there any high stakes? Because if you're struggling to attract sponsors or people onto your journey, you have to ask yourself, is what I'm doing interesting? Is it compelling? And then I sort of encourage people to maybe look at it from a media perspective. You know, put yourself in the position of someone writing about motorsport. Why would they write about what you do or your sport? Because at the end of the day, what someone like Valentino Rossi did very well is he wasn't just someone who went racing. He was someone that went racing, but also wanted to expand the reach of MotoGP and make it more popular. So he he's just like the perfect example because he was a genius and he was charismatic and he understood all of these other things. So what I really want to encourage people is to be adventurous in how they go about motorsport and understand what makes things compelling. Because the book isn't going to, I'm not an expert in how to write sponsorship proposals. I've attracted sponsorship for various projects that I've done, but from my own experiences, it's because those people were compelled by what I was doing. It wasn't that they wanted to advertise so much. They just wanted to feel good to be part of a project that I was part of, like with when I was organizing the House of 100 events with Oliver Scullion. Very niche for listeners, but it was we put on historic kart events based on Formula Super A, which was like class in the 90s, which was just the best thing ever. And people just wanted to be a part of it. And they would, you know, we would get sent, people just want to send us money. And it's like, it was one point where you say, we have to actually justify why you want to give us money. It's got to be a sponsorship for a prize. You can't just, so you look, and once I did the British Karting Championship in 2011, because I wanted to promote the idea of a British Karting Championship being something of value. That's why I entered it. And I got a chassis from Ricky Flynn, who lent me a chassis, and he's one of the biggest kart teams in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And he can charge, he's got a blank check pretty much. Yes. For anyone that races with him, who knows about karting. So he lent me a car. I got engines from Bob Astle at Kartune. And anybody knows about karting costs, you know, these things aren't cheap. You know, these aren't cheap things to get. And then I got I went with AIM Motorsports. Steve Lake gave me space in his awning. And then John Hoyle helped me with tyres. He helped me with entry. So effectively, I got, for one weekend, I got everything. And it wasn't because I was going there to win. It was because I was going to promote the event because I felt a need to do it. And I got sponsorship as well from other people who just wanted to be part of it. So it's one of the frustrations that I have as I see, particularly now, is I see a lot of young people who have huge potential. And I only scratch the surface with what I do because I sort of limit myself by my passion with karts. And there's an inherent limit with that because there's only so much I can do with it. But you see so many young people, and some of them are spending vast amounts of money. And I just go, just take 10% of your budget and put it into doing really cool stuff. Like, not just like blogging your racing or talking about yourself. Do adventurous things. And you never know what could happen.
Such as?
Okay, so for example, what I would do if I was young, again, and I actually tried this and I never completed it because I have a real big problem with completing projects. If I told you of a young driver, a young carter, and they decided, I'm fed up of racing Tony carts. I'm fed up of paying money to teams. I'm going to build my own chassis because nobody does that anymore. I don't build, no one's building a kart chassis to go racing with. I'm going to build it myself. Imagine, let's take an 18-year-old and he's doing engineering. He's going, I'm going to build it. Oh, I'm going to take on Tony Kart. I'm going to beat him at their own game. I'm going to weld the chassis myself. I've tried it myself, but I'm a real rubbish at finishing projects. But if someone's spending the money already, because I know how much people spend, you immediately go, okay, there's the adventure. There's the call to adventure. You're going to have doubts because you're going to go, what happens if it doesn't work out? Okay, so there's that little interplay between a call to adventure, but the hero in the story is still a bit nervous about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a mentor. So maybe it's one of the old boys from back in the day who built carts, help you. You can document all this, film it, whatever.
Beautiful.
And then you have your ordeals, your tests. So you take your cart testing, you find out whether it works, whether it don't, you get over whether it cracks, you fix it, get it better. Then you start racing it. And each one of these layers is, I'm looking at it as from a viewer perspective going, I don't care whether the driver's any good or not. I want to know if the cart works. Is it good? Is it bad? Because there's some stakes, because every decision that you make suddenly has a consequence. If you're just going racing something boring, you race the MX5 Cup, and nothing against MX5 Cup, and I don't want to make this sound bad. From the perspective of a media perspective, I'm going, I've got nothing to write about here. If someone's building something from scratch, and you look for things where you can do it, karting is a good example, suddenly, bang, it's like, oh, this is an adventure. And then you engage, and then people get engaged with it, and they can, and you could do this for a long time. This is an interesting one. Like Richard Brunning, who does, he's got a YouTube channel called Bad Obsession Motorsport, and it's a really popular, and I know him from karting, but he started this ginormous YouTube channel called Project Binky, and he spent about 5 years building a mini. People love it. But if you look at it from a racing concept, I'm immediately engaged by someone trying to do something different outside of the norm. And you can be anything, and I think sometimes people are, this is what my book isn't for everybody, because there is huge amounts of people happy with what they do and race what they want to race. But sometimes, look at where adventure is, look at where you can be challenged, where you can try something, whether you can, because one of the big problems, I think, is if there's no chance of failure, I'm not interested. There's no chance for something to go wrong. It's like, it's a thing. It's just an emotional thing. If you can take people on an emotional roller coaster, you're in such a good position to be engaging and to be interesting and to be compelling. And if you have, you never know what you can inspire in other people, because if you do something and then someone else does something, then there's an interplay. There's someone's doing something opposite to you. There's a bit of friction. Suddenly you've got, a protagonist and antagonist. It's like Rossi did it very well. He was a protagonist, and anyone that challenged him was an antagonist, and you get a bit of friction, a bit of narrative glue. So it's, that's something I would do, but there's so many more things you can do. But anything in motorsport where you're doing something where there's a chance of failure, technical failure, engineering failure, anything like that, it's immediately engaging. It's all about risk, competitive risk is a very, very good thing to have. I think I could make a philosophical point. Spec racing is very attractive for people, but it does make motorsport less compelling. So if that's nothing wrong with that, I'm just talking to a cohort of people who may be thinking, oh, actually, I could do something more with it. That's who I'm really aiming the book at.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, so who specifically is it targeted for? The athletes, the parents, the clubs, the teams?
I think championship organisers, I think, would get something from the book. Or the promoters. I think a lot of promoters, because you have two types of racing. You have spectator based racing, you have competitor-based racing. And as you'll know, competitor-based racing means the event runs on the competitors' entries, and spectator racing like F1 and that relies upon spectators. So anybody that's involved in spectator-based motorsport, to understand what's really... I mean, IndyCar at the moment is going through a bit of a identity crisis, because you see these drivers saying, you know, we need to make it more interesting, we need to make it more of a show. And it's like, you have to look at the fundamentals of what makes something compelling. So anybody that's involved in championship organizing, but drivers that are maybe sitting there looking for, but if you're involved in the sponsor game, it's definitely aimed at you. And it's not going to, if you want to do, you know, the sponsorship proposals and the stuff that I'm not very good at, I can't deal with that. What I want to do is encourage people to look at how do you make what you do more compelling, more interesting, so that when you do have to perfect proposals and stuff like that, you're not having to sell something that is already there. It's already a narrative that anybody can hook into right away. So just for drivers that are looking for an adventure in their motorsport career and looking to develop their sporting career, their professional career, and promote what they do, and promote the people that are around them as well, you know, because it's not just an insular thing. So anybody involved in that kind of realm.
And I think the last question I wanted to ask is around about the storytelling side of it. So we've touched base about having the hero. But also I'm thinking, like, obviously there's a great connection with yourself. You're saying that you were previously a musician, and the storytelling. So is that how the idea for the book came up as well? Like, did you used to write music as well? And obviously when you're writing, you're telling a story, and that's what you thought was a transferable skill across the two industries?
I think it's probably more a case of being an undiagnosed ADHD person. He's constantly trying to seek novelty, really. Mm-hmm. So I'm very tuned into, like, what makes things interesting and compelling, because that's kind of,
yeah,
because what I try to understand is what makes things, because if you've got a I don't like the term ADHD, but if you've got personality trait that is seeking novel things or interesting things, you'll find patterns in music. You'll find patterns in motorsport, because I look at motorsport more through a creative lens than I do a competitive lens. So I enjoy deconstructing regulations to try and find avenues for exploitation. So if I can find something that doesn't quite add up, I'll be like, oh, I can. That's a creative outlet. So where there's similarities is creative outlets. Music is very good. It's almost too free. And motorsport has these weird limitations, but you kind of need them to create structure. Whereas mm-hmm. music's almost too creative, because there's nothing stopping you. There's no cheats. That's not the right word in a motorsport concept. There's no gray areas to go on and to ask questions and like go, you know, is this regulation? Can we, like, you know, you think about double diffusers in F1 in 2009, or exhaust blown diffusers, the original F duct, all that kind of stuff, which it's just, Formula One in particular, it's a bit more restrictive and prescriptive now, which is a shame. But if you ever listen to Adrian Newey, he sounds more like a artist than he does an engineer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's where the similarities are. So if you look at your motorsport more as a creative outlet, then you see where the potential lies. And that's the thing. If you look at what's going on at the moment in F1, it's pretty much a shapeshifter. Not a shapeshifter. I'm thinking of shapeshifters because I wanted to make a point. It's like a soap opera.
Yes, it is.
So, but this is the point there is, people go, I just want to focus on the racing. not the soap opera, but the technical structure of F1 is what creates the jeopardy and high stakes that creates the compelling nature of all the stories that surround F1. Because the reason it's so compelling is because the technical involvement of personnel at the elite, at the higher echelons of the teams, is so important that if you lose Adrian Newey, you suddenly lose a big factor in your performance. So it's this weird interconnection of how the technical regulations inject high stakes and jeopardy, which then manifests itself in these characters having a weird amount of value in the public sphere. The reason why I said shapeshifter by accident, because it popped in my head, is the characters, the archetypes. Mm-hmm. I try and explain that the good thing about motorsport is a shapeshifter, which is a character type in a film, someone that might, maybe the, it's hard to explain. You use something like a character that just shifts all the time, their viewpoint. They're a bit of a unstable factor in a film that creates a kind of nice tension. You know, you can, a vehicle can be a shapeshifter. A vehicle itself, you know, you think of, in the book, I explain how in 2006, the Yamaha M1 that Rossi was on had chattering problems, and it's this weird thing that the bike starts doing that, and it puts the riders off, and it just happened sort of now and again. And it's like, or a car like the Mercedes the last 2 years, the rear end has been very unpredictable. So the cars themselves can take on character traits, and it's important when you're understanding what makes things interesting is if you're racing in a class where you have variance, technical variance, the cars themselves have an inbuilt personality that helps create jeopardy and interest, because, you know, sometimes a car isn't going to work. Sometimes the aero platform that you've developed, whatever, doesn't work quite so well. So that all just feeds into itself.
Fantastic. Do you have a personal question? Obviously, you're an author of two books. How did you go about authoring your books? Did you self-publish them or did you do
Yes. That? The original... The first book, we had an offer from a publisher, but it wasn't an amazing offer. So we decided that we always had a plan to self-publish, and with the self-publishing platforms now, you know, like Amazon and Ingram Spark. To me, it's funny because I go about the music thing. I wrote an essay in 2003, and I just said, right, musicians have to learn how to be independent because record companies are a nightmare. And then you find yourself years later, the same thing kind of happening with books. So we self-published the first book, and it was very successful. And then this one I've just released. And I think it's one of those things that, like, everything I do is not just a personal thing. I want to encourage others that maybe think, do you know what, I can give that a go. You know, maybe you can give it a go. You know, don't feel like all of these things are kind of special and out there. I mean, it's fortunate, I think, from the karting experience that I've had, because I've interacted with people that now you'd think are now like worth hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever it is, and you go, yeah, but these are they're just normal people. You know, they were kids once. And it's like everything you do is like, everything I want to do is encourage people to say, you know what, it isn't, you know, you don't have to go with a publisher. I'm a contrarian by nature. So if a publisher comes to me and says, oh, we want you to do this and this and this, I'll be like, I don't know. I'd rather just do it my own way. Thanks. I can do it all. I can format the book. I can write the book. I can kind of edit the book. Maybe maybe an editor would come in and improve it, but I can do the front cover, I can do all the design. And it's like all of this thing is about, so that even at the root of the book is to encourage people that, yeah, sure, you can do things you don't know are possible. So even if it's self-publishing or whatever, or being something, or doing an adventurous thing in motorsport, because I have a thing about one of my earliest, my best karting memories was a friend of mine Will Dendy did the British Karting Championship in 2009, and he was like 18 at the time. He was doing it off his own back completely. He didn't have a rich dad. He was working, and he was doing some crazy things to get the money. And he was racing effectively a team run by Paul Fletcher. Paul Fletcher's a multimillionaire, and he was racing him, and he was doing it on his own. And it's like, is this thing of like, people can be so trapped in thinking that I'm just at this level. And I'm like, no, you can put yourself in these areas, you know. And that's really the message of the book. It's like, you know, you can be adventurous in motorsport. It does allow for it. And you can create something really special, because I see a lot of potential in a lot of areas of motorsport for there to be really interesting things happen, really exciting things can happen. Like, even in America, it sounds ridiculous, is people started building power wheels. They'd get a power wheels toy car, right, which is kids run, and they'd weld together a chassis, throw in a 450F motocross engine, and then they'd all do it for a laugh. And then next minute, someone's organising a race meeting, and it looks like the best race meeting I've ever seen. Or you have Dirtquake, and obviously with what happened in 2020, this is what nailed a lot of these fun things. It's a shame. I want a lot of it to come back. You have Dirtquake, which was like it's a bike event where it's usually on dirt ovals and speedway tracks, and people just have these weird little classes of like mopeds or choppers. And one year Carl Fogarty raced and Guy Martin does it, and it's these things where they're these really fun and idiosyncratic people run these events, and it's just to encourage people to say anything is possible. And if I really, it's a call to action for everybody that's kind of has that adventurous aspect to them, that there's huge potential out there. And obviously with your sponsorship stuff, it's if you want to develop sponsors, I mean, organizing events and doing adventurous things is the number one thing I put at the top of the list to do. If you were motivated to do that, it's not for everybody, but it's an opportunity.
Wonderful. I like it. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Alan. Where can people go and purchase a book or learn more about it? Your books, I say.
yeah. Just if you search for Motorsport Sagas on Amazon, or the full title Motorsport Sagas. I have this thing about having these long titles. Because the event that I did with House of Hundreds, right, we ended up, it was almost a joke, but it was part of the fun. So it ended up being called the London Diamonds House of Hundred, 100 Super Championship Belt, right? So it was almost just for a bit of fun. So I have this thing about long titles. So yeah, Motorsport Sagas, Unlocking the Power of Storytelling in Racing, and that's on Amazon. And if you search for The Science of the Racer's Brain on there, that book's available as well. And there's a hardback version of that book as well. So it's all on Amazon. Or if you search for, I have a blog as well, Alan Dove coaching.wordpress.com, where I scribble sometimes I scribble some thoughts down that aren't enough to write a book about. My thing I'm on at the moment is about Susanna Raganelli. That's my next project. So yeah, if you keep an eye on that, there might be updates on that as well.
Fantastic. Well, I'll make sure all those links are in today's show notes. Yes. Is there anything else you wanted to share with us today, Alan, before we wrap it up?
I just wish people out there just to say, you know, have an adventure with motorsport. And if this one person just has a bit of a motivation to be a creative outlet and do something a bit different, you've got my backing. go for it. That's just the message I want to put out there, really.
That's right. Well, at the end of the day, uniqueness is what's going to project you forward, or like you say, get in front of the right sponsors that is going to align with your brand and your values and stuff like that.
So yeah, there's nothing better than going on an adventure and expanding what you do. Like I said in the book, there's a lot of social media accounts out there. You're competing with a lot of people. But to be brutal, I don't see a lot of people creating things. I see a lot of people talking about themselves. But if you can see it from a creative perspective, I think the potential's for something really cool to come of it. And that's my main goal, you know.
Yeah, I love it. Well, thank you very much for all your advice and information today. So guys, race out and check out Alan's book. And again, the link to the books will be available in today's show notes. Alan, thank you very much for your time. Make sure you get in contact next time we release another book. I'll be happy to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to this week's show. I really hope you enjoyed that one as much as I did. Now, remember, all the show notes with the links and the specials mentioned in today's show are available over at motivatetraining.com.au. If you haven't already, I'd really appreciate if you could head to iTunes or Stitcher, type in Motorsport Coaching, subscribe and leave us a review. Each week, I'll read them out and you'll go into monthly draw to win a fantastic prize. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at motivatetraining.com.au or head over to our Facebook page at Motivate. Until next time, take care. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, our tailored services are designed to propel you to victory. From our personalized coaching programs to our comprehensive online courses covering sponsorship, social media, branding, public relations, media interview training, athlete performance, to our sponsorship VIP days and the Ultimate Drivers Toolkit, we've got everything you need to accelerate your success on and off the track. Race to motivatetraining.com.au